This Coin Week podcast is brought to you by PCGS. PCGS is the standard in the rare coin grading industry. Visit PCGS.com to learn more. At the Florida United Numismatists Summer Show, I sat down with Coin Week contributing writer Joshua McMara Hernandez to talk about the coin market, two recent articles he's worked on for Coin Week, and his new role as editor of the Florida United Numismatists Fun Topics magazine.
Everybody, I'm Coin Week editor Charles Morgan, and we're at the Florida United Numismatists Show, the summer show in Orlando, Florida, and I'm here with my friend Joshua McMara Hernandez, the Coin Week readers and Coin Age readers, and pretty soon Fun Topics readers will know very well. Joshua is a writer. He won the NLG's New Writer Award, which you can only win once.
Exactly.
We're going to talk a little bit about the coin market and how things are going, the things he's hearing, and also about his new role as editor of Fun Topics.
Thanks for having me, Charles. I really appreciate it. Yes.
So we're in your home turf, Florida.
We are top down here, especially in summertime, and we thank you for coming down here and bearing the humidity and the heat and having a good time here at Fun. And I got to tell you, it's been quite a show so far. It seems like a lot of great things going on here and a lot of buzz going on the floor. And I've talked to a lot of dealers, and they're all excited about what they're selling. And I'm hearing some stuff in the market that's interesting, and I'd like to talk about that as we go forward in this interview, Charles.
Sure. Well, let's talk about the market. So we've essentially, truth be told, been sort of in a choppy market for about maybe two and a half years.
Exactly, yeah.
Some sectors of the market are actually doing pretty well, though, and I think a lot of this gets underplayed. So what are you hearing? Where do you think the market's getting stronger?
Every dealer I talk to says bullion, modern coins. That is where the excitement is right now. They're looking at the fact that gold and silver, they've gone up, gone down, but it keeps people engaged in the marketplace. When they see prices go up, they buy. People want to seize that opportunity before they think that they can't afford gold anymore or afford silver. Then prices come down. All of a sudden, hey, there's a bargain. Let's go buy these coins. But across the board, I find that dealers are excited about the modern coins as a whole. World coins, domestic coins, U.S. coins, people want today modern coins because they offer choices we didn't have 20 years ago. They offer price points that people can now afford. And I think that it's a new frontier for collectors now. People can be able to buy coins of Superman on there. People can buy coins of Mickey Mouse or a Disney princess or whatever. 30 years ago, 20 years ago, we didn't have those options, Charles. So people, I think, today are excited about the options they have, the designs out there, and the prices. They're dirt cheap now, a lot of modern coins.
Okay, well, that's interesting. So I flew to Bangkok earlier in the summer in May.
Right.
And I spoke at the World Mint Directors Conference, and one of the things I touched on, maybe not touched on is a word, but hammered home was the fact that the mints are creating so many coins that if you extrapolate the Krausey Mischler catalog for the 21st century to the end of the century, you're looking at an 11,000 page catalog.
Now,
that's great for choice. You get a lot of choice, a lot of variety. But how are dealers making money in a marketplace where it seems like the mint has become the front line retail operation for the distribution of these coins?
And I think that's actually a mixed answer there, Charles, because you look at the fact that we have all these coins today and some are doing really, really well. But most, like you've seen in the past with U.S. Commanders, for example, they don't do well in secondary market situations. For 6 months to a year after they are released, yes, there is some activity. But across the board, you see, again, prices fall as people lose interest in that series. March of Dimes, for example, a great place to look, for example. You see that there was a lot of interest originally with the reverse proof.
Right, the reverse proof, the W dime, and the P dime.
People were buying them. But I talk to dealers now, and they say that they're not selling anymore. People don't want to, they're not spending money there anymore. So you look at really any modern coin, yes, you're going to have the risk of not having a strong secondary marketplace after a year or two. But I think, though, there's enough interest out there, according to dealers anyway, that people they want the options. They want those Disney coins, and they want those NASCAR coins. Now, great point about the fact that the Krausey catalog would be so large in 80 years, let's say. Hypothetically, if mints keep making coins as they are, we're going to have too many coins to choose from. What do you do? I think we've yet to see where that's going to take us, honestly. But what I do feel, anyway, from my perspective, is that even though I'm a classic type collector, I love Barber coins, City Liberty coins, or Drake busts, I can see why there's an allure for those modern coins, because you can find good deals, and because of the secondary market collapse, you can get those good prices on those coins and have the options that you're going to need, you know, so you can be able to fill gaps in your collection as you want. I'll tell you this, Charles. I think this is a very changeable marketplace right now. We don't know where we're heading. We've seen a lot of changes, of course, in bullion in the last, look at the last 2 weeks for the Brexit, for example.
Right.
Gold went up to 1380, wasn't it? 1370? Came down now to 1350, 1360. People are selling their coins. They don't, you know, they're gold coins. And so definitely, I think we're at a point now where we've got to see the economy get stronger, get people back in the marketplace again. And I think personally, as a 35-year-old collector, get more young people in the hobby so we can support the base.
Well, let me ask you a question. Okay, mm-hmm. So Pat Heller, in the mm-hmm. recent issue of the Numismatic News, mm-hmm. Published a prediction that, you know, he sees silver now crossing the $20 threshold, but he sees it going to $100.
$100, yeah.
You could probably make a mint citing all the examples. Somebody claimed bullion would go to some
astronomical
level.
Charles, right. Yeah.
But if an ounce of silver goes up to $100 an ounce, I mean, that is trouble for a modern coin minting industry, because
right.
now all of a sudden you've taken a collectible that they want $100 for, now
sure,
it's $16
sure.
silver,
right.
and now maybe it's a $200 or $300 collectible. And at that point, what is the benefit of buying a $300 modern coin versus a classic coin?
A classic coin. And that's a decision that the average collector has to make him or herself, because frankly, we don't have a crystal ball. We don't know where the market's really going to go. We thought back in 2011 we're going to have $5,000 gold in a couple of years. It never happened. Silver go to $100. Never happened. Yes, you have a situation where you're going to see gold go up, silver go up, and come down. And collectors wondering, gee whiz, do I stick with this series? Do I stick with a modern series? Or do I take that same money and plunk it into a Drake bust dime collection or what have you? But I think part of this goes back to the bigger point is the economy is still not really quite back where it was in the 1990s when we had so much activity happening across the board and when we had a different collector base that is no longer involved in the hobby. And that's why I say we have to get not just younger collectors in there buying coins and creating a new base, but we need to see where this economy is going to go. We need to see where prices are going to settle, not just for bullion, but for classics, for rare coins, and other types as well.
Well, I guess it's probably no accident that the choppy coin market mm-hmm. has been falling in the shadow of gold falling from its high
right,
at $1,800
right.
an ounce.
Back in 11,
you know,
exactly,
right? So,
yeah.
So we've seen that as an issue. But, you know, again, like, you know, I think Huber and I once, we were making a study of the numismatic premium
sure.
on type gold coins.
Sure.
And it seemed that the higher that gold spot price got, the narrower that numismatic premium got, almost mm-hmm. as if, like, you know, people no longer could ascribe a numismatic value to something because it's so common. So, once you go up in value to that
exactly.
point, when you get a $1,000 coin, there are fewer collectors who can collect a $1,000 coin than a $50 coin. And then that funnel keeps getting narrower and narrower the higher the price goes.
Let's look at the classic pre-33 gold coins, for example, and look back in 1995. 6 and 7. We had gold at 350 an ounce, more or less, but we had double eagles at $525. We're talking, what, $175 spread between the spot price and the Newsmax premium. And look, today, you can buy yourself a double eagle, St. Gaudens or Liberty.
Got one.
Exactly,
right.
Just got one, exactly. And you're looking at maybe a $65 to $85 premium for circulated pieces, of course, Charles. We're not talking mint state, which has a strong premium. We're talking about basically spot pieces that are being used for bullion purposes, for the most part. And there's been a compression in the premium price. You're exactly right, Charles.
But let me think about this.
Sure.
Getting back to this double eagle. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
For most collectors, mm-hmm. you know, buying an ounce of gold is that's an investment.
It is.
I mean, it's not a spontaneous impulse buy kind of coin, right?
You don't just walk out your front
right.
door and buy yourself
right.
a couple ounces of gold.
You don't go to the dealer junk box and say, "Oh, let me look at your double eagles.
Right.
I'll buy these three." So, you know, it's difficult for me to imagine that a coin dealer can make a lot of money off of selling numismatic premium on gold coins when it takes the typical collector several months to save up for that dealer to make $80.
I was doing and you're exactly right, Charles. I did a piece a while back for Coinage Magazine. It was a market report. And I called 5 dealers about this very, very topic, Charles. And I asked them about gold prices, because back then we were about, it was 10, 65, 1070. It was right like in the heart of December. Gold came down to its lowest point in the last, 7 years?
Yeah.
8 years. And they told me, even at that price, that they found it difficult to sell gold to collectors. Now, again, bullion investors, they were snapping it up because they like the allure of a pre-33 gold purchase because they have the investment potential, A. But B, they also got the chance to sell that coin for numismatic purposes in case the investment side on the metal side didn't do so well for them. And that was the main market for those dealers I spoke to back in December. Now, today, where we see gold going back up to $1,350, $1,400 possibly in the next couple of months, who knows where it's going to go, that dynamic might have changed. But you're exactly right. There has been a compression in premium price because dealers cannot sell gold anymore like they could 10 years ago.
Well, again, like I said, I think, if you look around most towns these days, I mean, I don't know how many towns have local coin shops anymore. I mean, this is...
Even mine, in a big town here in Florida, we've got 5 or 6, which is actually down from the 10 that we had about 10 years ago.
Right.
Right before the housing bubble collapsed.
Right, right. Are those traditional coin shops in the sense...
Most mom and pops are two that are corporate.
Right, but are they coin shops? Are they bullion...
Well, they have a bullion component.
Right.
They actually, believe it or not, are numismatic driven, but they have a strong bullion sector.
Right. So.
And when I talk to them, they say that a good part of, they didn't say what fraction, but that a good part of their customer base is bullion driven.
Right, right. So then it gets back to how these coins get distributed. If you have like a wide network of local coin shops, then that means mm-hmm. there's material that's always dispersed. If there's fewer of those shops, that material sort of becomes more concentrated. And what we end up seeing is that the market sits on a lot of inventory.
You know what's a good point too to bring up is we look at Florida, for example, a big retiree state. We have people coming from all over the country and even the world coming down here. They're living here and they're selling the coins or their coins end up distributed to these dealers. And you have to wonder, is there a geographic component to this as well? If you were to look at dealers, say, from Mid-Atlantic, for example, or the West Coast, where you might have fewer retirees, which I think, for the most part, it's fair to say, represent a large share of the collector base, would you see the same type of material in, say, Virginia or California or New York as opposed to Florida, which has all these collectors descending upon this state and selling off material? It makes you wonder, it'd be a good analysis actually to consider.
Well, I think it's fair to say that if you can't sell coins in California,
right,
where they're, very rich economy,
sure,
you can't sell coins in Florida with a high retirement age.
Absolutely, yeah.
New York, which has always been a great coin city, or coin state, and Texas, I guess, because you have a lot of hard currency types.
Sure.
And wealthy oil industrialists and things like
exactly,
that.
Exactly, right.
If you can't sell coins in those four states,
Where can you sell them?
I think you're in trouble. But,
you are. And that's why bullion, again, has become that big sector for the entire marketplace. We're seeing now people, yes, there's obviously going to always be demand for your Sea Liberty coins, your Drake Bus coins, your Lincoln Cents, but modern coins and bullion coins, which again, we're looking at those people who are investing in gold and silver and platinum and palladium, that is where a lot of that activity is right now. Now, will it sustain? Let's say the market improves in the next 10 years and we see people, making higher wages and having more money to spend on art and collectibles and whatnot. Will we see that market go back to a classic realm? Who knows? Maybe by then we'll have a new generation of collectors coming in. They might have a different interest. But I think the long and short of it really is we're now in the midst of a market shakeup, and how it'll all settle out is really yet to be seen.
So let's look at what's not going to be coming down the pike from the U.S. Mint and see how that might affect the collectible market. 2016 marks the end of the first Bauce gold bullion series. Marks the end of the presidential dollar series. Outside of maybe some error collectors on the missing edge letters, I don't know how much of an impact the presidential dollars had on the market. You recently did an analysis for CoinWeek about the First Lady, First Spouse series.
Exactly.
What did you learn in doing your research on that?
I'll tell you, and this goes back to an earlier point of bullion. We've seen that very few of those coins, the First Spouse coins, the gold coins, really had much of a chance at all. The first year was pretty well. We had Martha Washington sell 20,000 pieces more or less. We saw the earlier First Ladies do well, but by year 2 and 3, we saw men just drop off to 4,000 pieces, 3,000 pieces. Now, of course, bear in mind, that also corresponded with the huge spike in bullion back in 2010 and 11 and 12. So they had to place something into that changeable distribution of those pieces. But the long and short of this really is that the prices on these coins are almost over, just a tad over spot. Mm-hmm. So again, bullion component is involved with that. Now, I think that what we'll see is maybe in the future, if we see any interest in collecting gold, modern gold coins of that type, the First Spouse coin series would make a great place to start, because you have a self-contained 41 coin series there, which a collector could be able to buy at spot. And we have a lot of scarce pieces, by the way, there. I believe it's the Eleanor Roosevelt piece, I want to say, which is one of the lowest mintage First Spouse coins in the series, which could go up in value dramatically if there's ever a stronger interest in that particular program. So I think that for the collector who wants to spend money on the First Spouse coins, there's a lot of upper potential, but there's got to be people coming into that market, buying those coins up, and creating a demand for them. But for those intrepid pioneers who want to buy up the First Spouse program, each piece, they could have in their hands some very expensive coins in the next 5 or 10 years.
Are you better off buying into that series now than at issue price?
Well, that's a great question. And a lot of that comes down to what's bullion going to do. Because right now, if let's say gold stays where it is at $1,350-ish, $1,400, it might be a great deal. But of course, there's always a chance of a downward spiral. We've seen it before. 2012, 13, we all thought gold would go to $5,000 an ounce. Never happened, at least not yet. So potentially you could see yourself making money off this deal if you were to buy now and gold either maintains and we see prices on the premiums go up from what they are now to a more scarce or a market-driven build, especially on the scarcer pieces, or of course the gold goes up. Obviously, yes, there's an obvious upside there. But I think that answer really will come in the next 5 or 10 years as we see, again, interest build in that series on sort of a retrospective standpoint of looking back at it and saying, wow, we have 41 coins that are pretty nice looking for the most part. Some maybe leave something to be desired, but for the most part, they're nice designs and they have low mintages across the board. And I think that makes it an attractive buy, for that collector who might want to take a chance and see what happens.
So are we seeing any correlation with aftermarket, secondary market price points on these coins and mintages?
You know, I've not seen it yet, not based on who I've spoken to anyway. I've spoken to four dealers about this for the First Spouse piece that I did, and they didn't see any particular areas of any, you know, growth. But then again, that could happen after the series ends in the next couple of months and we see interest grow sort of in a hindsight perspective, as it were.
So another thing that I think you've been working on, mm-hmm. since we're getting ready to kick off the very stigmatized, I'd say, by this point, Rio,
sure.
Olympic Games.
Yes.
It's an Olympic,
yes.
article. So when's the last year the U.S. struck an Olympic commemorative coin?
2002, with the Winter Olympics in Salt Lake City.
Salt Lake City. Not one of the more attractive designs.
No, unless you love architecture and want to see the skyline of Salt Lake City, which I'm sure you've got one collector out there somewhere who might find that to be a great coin. But you're right, and I think this goes back to a larger point, and I think this also touches back on the First Spouse coins. There was some concerns about the quality of the artwork, and it makes you wonder if some of these coins are held back in the marketplace, not because of the demand per se for the type or the topic, but because of the design of the coin. And the Olympic coins, I think, are a neat series. Because you think about it, yes, there are so many out there, 60, 61, if you include proof and BU varieties. But for the collector who appreciates modern coins and topical subjects like sports, for example, or world events, I think it's a great series. But again, if you're looking at it from the artistic standpoint, I think there are some things left to be desired. And you almost wonder when we get the Olympics back here in the U.S., which is going to be at least 2024 at this point, another, 8 years from now, will there have been enough time between 02 with the Salt Lake City coins and 24, hypothetically, or beyond, where you might see a shift in not just the design quality, but also the number of coins produced in conjunction with the event. 95, 96 with the Atlanta Olympics, we saw this happen with 32 different issues.
Right.
16 designs, 32 issues. And that was a flood of coins. I remember I was in the market already by that point, and I had the catalog from the U.S. Mint back then. And half the catalog, I'm not even joking, Charles, was Olympic coinage. And you almost wonder, was the collector so overwhelmed by the options, by the number of of coins he or she had to buy to have a complete set of Olympic coins from Atlanta, did it drive away some of that collector base?
Well,
who knows?
Here's an interesting anecdote, maybe. I got into coins because my grandmother, she was a Bitcoin collector. And I remember one day as a kid digging through her collection, and then out comes the 1983-84 Olympic coins.
Right, right.
I'd never seen gigantic silver coins before.
Exactly.
And those always stuck with me. So I've always had a fondness for them.
Right, right.
I have those coins now.
Yeah.
But when you get to when I went through her collection, she basically had every commemorative coin the United States Mint struck up until I would say about the 1995.
Right, right.
Just when that Olympic set came out.
The deluge of coins.
Didn't have any of those coins. Didn't have any of the valuable commemorative coins that came out that are, or I would say valuable, the ones that are now worth more than issue price.
But
had every common one. And then when she got back into it, they were all common again.
Right.
There must have been something just catastrophically bad with the U.S. Mint's marketing at this window of time, because, if my grandmother didn't have it and she essentially had every piece of junk they ever put out, then there was something going wrong. And I think you look at that 1995.
Sure.
You had another major set, very expensive set, that now you'd be remiss if you didn't pick it up, and that was that.
The 32-coin... set we're talking about.
I'm not talking about the Olympic set, though. I'm talking about the three coin or the
gold set with the 95 W Eagle, Silver Eagle, exactly.
Yeah, you got 1.875 ounces of gold and one Silver Eagle for $999.
Exactly.
Which is amazing. But that Silver Eagle.
But back then was $375 bucks an ounce for gold and about $5 for silver.
So, but that Silver Eagle is the 95W.
$4,000 bucks right there. I mean, that'd be a heck of a profit to make over the last 20 years. It would have beaten out a lot of investments people have had in the market in the last 20 years. Look at the stock market, the way it's gone, And I think this, again, and this is why there is an allure to invest. People do invest in coins and they do make money. I don't like to tout our hobby, our industry, our realm as a place to invest, because obviously I would say part of it is to collect for joy, the joy of the coins, the history. But yes, there is a chance to make money in this as well. And I think that the 95 proof set, the Eagle proof set, is a great example of that. And even though looking at the Olympic coins, for example, there were some uncirculated specimens that would have made great buys had one had the foresight to know to buy, for example, the swimming half dollar, which is now $150 coin, more or less, uncirculated. And the last four silver dollars from the Olympic series of that year, or that 2 year span.
Not the proofs.
The uncirculated, exactly. These are all uncirculated. Were great buys as well. We're looking at coins that are worth between $125 and $225 now, uncirculated again, versus what, $25, $30 bucks for the issue price back in those days. So that by far beat out inflation. But again, those are exceptions to the rule. That's not the guide. We've seen most coins today issued from the Mint do descend in value within 2 to 3 years and don't do well in secondary marketplace. But I think, again, there's that allure for what if this is the issue that will go up in price. I can say I bought the March of Dimes set by myself out of speculation that it might do well. And lo and behold, obviously now we flatlined. I mean, it's not worth much more than it was at issue time of issue. And but I think, again, you look at the picture of coin collecting and what it offers the buyer, be it for classics, be it for moderns or whatever, there is that drive to make money. And there is a drive to, see what one can do for profits. And I think 95, 96, yes, I think there was so much to choose from. People just stopped. They didn't know what to buy. Look at the proof sets. Even the 95 proof set, the clad proof set, for 5 to 7 years after it was issued, was worth multiples of its issue price. Because why? I think, this is my opinion now, people who bought mint sets and proof sets on an annual basis didn't know what to buy. They were buying Olympic coins. They were buying Eagles. They were buying this and that. And they weren't sticking to their usual purchases of the mint sets and the proof sets. So their money was dispersed. And therefore, the traditional sets lost out, I think, those 2 years.
So do you think modern commemorative collectors have finally figured it out that it's, if you're going to buy a coin, one coin, to get the uncirculated one?
Look at this. 35 years now I've had the modern commemorative program going on, and there are still gaps great spreads between proof and uncirculated specimens, with a favor going toward the uncirculated in almost every case. And what I think is this. I think if you look at who's buying the proof coins and who's buying the uncirculated coins, there's a difference, I do believe, in my personal estimation as to what kind of marketplace those two types of coins go for. I think that the collector who has an eye toward investment does buy the uncirculated specimen. I think that the, let's say, the less numismatically inclined buyer is going for the proofs because they're the prettier coins, they have that gloss, that sheen, they come in that pretty packaging, Charles, you know, they do all that, the mint, those boxes and all. They definitely, I think, have the aesthetic allure. But as we've learned over the last three decades, if you're going to make money at all in modern commems, it's going to be the uncirculated issues.
Well, here's my pro tip.
What do you see?
For modern commemorative collectors, buy rainbow-toned.
Oh, those are some pretty coins.
Graded rainbow-toned.
Exactly.
Modern commemoratives.
Right.
Because almost every one of them is going to be blast white or,
exactly,
or slightly tarnished and encapsulated.
Right.
They're not going to tone. Get the rainbow-toned coins because those are the ones that are really going to go somewhere because they are,
yeah,
so attractive. A large silver dollar coin of rainbow. Look at a Morgan Dollars or anything else,
right,
like that with that kind of color. And the fact of the matter is, there's just not going to be as many of those as you think, unless people start baking them up and making
it. We've had doctoring happen before.
Right, right, right.
We know that's the situation.
Yeah.
But nothing beats, in my opinion, you look at the Morgan Dollars, you look at any coin, Charles. If you get a piece out there, some great rainbow toning, MS67, 6869, or proof, for that matter, with the more modern coins. Nothing really beats, I think, the appeal of those toned coins.
So, one of the new hats you're wearing now is you're the co-editor of Fun Topics.
Co-editor, exactly. My other editor, Jay Chamberlain, he's working on the advertising side. I'm doing content and putting layouts together. And so far, it's coming along really well. I've got a background, as you know, Charles, writing for the last, really going back about 9 years. My first job, which I still have now, is the lead writer for the Fun Times Guide to Coins.com. And started writing there when I was just getting into the professional writing realm. And now that I have 9 years' experience in writing for different websites and different magazines, being the co-editor of Fun Topics has so far been challenging, but not one that I can't overcome. And I've been blessed to be able to take over the reins from a Jim and Carrie Best. They edited Fun Topics for the last 18 years. And really, two great people who know what they're talking about, who love the hobby, who love what they do. And so taking over the reins from them has been, for me, it's been a blessing because they've passed on a lot of knowledge to me and a lot of wisdom. And my goal is to run this torch forward and hopefully not just keep on doing what we're doing for fun, but also expand the readership, expand even the membership to a new realm of collectors, hopefully some younger collectors and those who are older but didn't know that we exist. And so the goal is to grow the magazine, to grow fun, and to appeal to an even broader base of collectors, Charles.
So what's the difference between a major club publication like the Fun Topics and,
sure,
the professional magazine Coin Age that you write for, or a website like Coin Week?
They're actually very similar in a lot of ways, in the sense that the ultimate goal is to reach the reader and show him or her what he or she's looking for. Yes, I mean, there are, of course, differences in administration, for example. Readership numbers are different, but the ultimate goal, I think, is always the same, and that is to write well, write in a way that conveys knowledge to the reader, and to do the best job you can, Charles. I mean, at the end of the day, we are all in a community here. You know, the coin collecting realm is really, even though it's large numbers-wise, we've got thousands of people who are involved, we're a big family. You know, and part of the goal is to share our knowledge with other people. And whether you write for a newsletter or a large magazine or something in between, the goal is to be able to share the best knowledge we have with the readers, with the other people, and help share our love and passion for the hobby with others. And hopefully, if we can bring more people from the outskirts into our hobby, that's all the better.
When's the first McMorrow Hernandez issue come out?
It should be out next month, late August.
What's the cover story? Got it yet?
We have it, and I'm looking at actually two ideas right now because we're still editing right now at this point, and there are two pieces I'm looking at. There's one that I want to write about myself, actually, as a little filler because we're getting some new writers coming in as contributing writers. Looking at doing a piece actually about young collectors and getting them into the hobby, why they should be in the hobby. And then we're looking at another piece that talks about dealer etiquette, actually,
and you know, how to approach a dealer, and you know, especially for first time collectors. And we were all there at one time. I remember my first time in a coin shop, and I was putting my hands everywhere, and I was 12 years old, so again, I was a kid in a candy shop, literally and figuratively. But my hope with Fun Topics, and really with anything that I touch as a writer or as an editor, is to not just talk to the people who've been in the hobby for years and years, but to appeal to people who are just coming into the fold, grab that attention while they're just coming in, and show them how wonderful this world of collecting really is, Charles.
So, well, I appreciate hearing that preview. We appreciate everything you've done for Coin Week, of the writing you've put in. We look forward to getting the first issue. And then I'll finally get the answer to the question whether or not it's bad dealer etiquette to dicker every price on every coin and then walk away without buying anything.
So that would tee a lot of people off, I think, Charles. And that should be, in fact, in the article for sure.
Right.
But I want to thank you, Charles, for having me here today. And also thank you for all you and Hubert do and Scott Purvis. You guys are doing some great services for our community. And just keep it up.
All right, cool. Well, we'll see you around more.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you like this podcast, please share it with your friends. You can also download all of our podcasts for free on the iTunes Store. For Coin Week, I'm Coin Week editor Charles Morgan, signing off until next time. Happy collecting.